Hello and welcome to The Outer Frame, the show where we talk about the movies that don't get talked about enough. I'm your host, Jason Sellers, and on today's episode, we will be discussing the 2002 Romandrady, that's right, I combined three words, Secretary, as well as some trailer trash talk. But first, let me introduce to you the best secretary I know, Donnie Nelson.
I'll work for nothing.
That's why you're so great.
Uh-huh.
The quality of your work leaves much to be desired. But
well, that's why you have all those red pens, right, Jason? You have all the red pens in the world to help me.
Yep.
Topical.
That's what I do. Donnie, what is the worst thing that you saw this week?
I'm going to break from the mold a little bit. The worst thing I watched this week was not something I just watched, but also played. And the thing I was playing was The Wolf Among Us, which is a Telltale video game that is based off the Fables comic or graphic. Mm-hmm. Well, it is comic. There's collected trade packs, but that's a different story. This is a prequel to the comics, and I got to about episode 4, because there's 5 episodes in a typical season of the Telltale games, and I have no interest in knowing anything more about these characters, because I don't know if it's just because it just hit me with this game, but the way that they structure those games and the way that they let you make decisions and affect the story is very, like, disingenuous to how they're trying to tell their stories, and I think it just finally caught up with me that it's not something that works for that, for these characters, this story, and honestly, it just, like I said, feels very disingenuous. I just stopped playing it because I didn't want to take part in the subterfuge anymore. Dishonesty. So no,
that makes sense. I really enjoy the comics. I haven't finished them, but I read the first 2 paperbacks, I think, and I really, really liked those. And I was very confused when they announced that they were making it into a game, because it didn't seem like it was, you know, set for a Telltale style storytelling. So I own it, have not played it.
Mm-hmm. They're making a second one now, so
why
even more? Because this one is a prequel to the comic book, and then I'm guessing that the next one is going to also be a prequel.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not interested unless they do something drastically different. I'm not interested anymore.
I guess now that they're done with The Walking Dead, they got to do something.
Mm-hmm. And that they came back to life essentially. Still interested in that Batman series. I'm going to try that and see if that's good.
I own that too.
Yeah, there's 2 of them, so
I own the Game of Thrones one as well. Uh-huh. I haven't played that either.
there was too much, and that's why they collapsed, and then the firm bought them, and then they're hired back a bunch of the same people, and now they're doing more stuff. But yeah, I could kind of see why it fell apart.
Gotcha. Well, I am going to tell you the worst thing that I saw this week was a movie that I never thought I would watch. I had no interest in watching, and yet saw it on Hulu and was like, I guess I'll watch this. And that is the remake of Conan the Barbarian. And to be clear, I have never seen the original Conan the Barbarian movies, but from what I hear, they're very campy.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very surprised, because I thought that this was rated PG-13. And oh boy, this is a hard R, because there is naked people left and right. There's so much violence. I was very confused, because I was just sitting there and I was like, man, this is really bloody for being a PG-13 flick. And then I was like, oh, I'm pretty sure that woman's topless. Oh, I'm pretty sure that woman's topless. And then I finally checked my phone and I was like, oh, this movie is rated R. So it just made me laugh. Anyway, it's really bad. We don't really need to talk about it other than saying that it was bad. I didn't care for it. I feel like if you are very much into movie, like if you wish that Khal Drogo, because they're played by the same guy, from Game of Thrones had his own movie, then you might enjoy this. I didn't. But even on a entertainment level, like on a, oh, the fight scenes might be cool. No. Not really.
No,
So.
it seemed like a very soulless cash grab use of the title.
Yeah, it felt like something that they made just so they could hang on to the rights of Conan the Barbarian, which did not realize this, but found out he's based on a literary character. So that was exciting. Donnie, what was the best thing that you saw this week?
The best thing I saw this week was I decided to, with the new trailer for Fast and Furious 9, and also the fact that I want to just, we just, I just want to do that episode on Better Luck Tomorrow. I watched Better Luck Tomorrow 6. I'm sure you can do the math, figure out what that one is. Fast 5.
Oh.
No, I wasn't trying to trick you. So Fast 5 is where people say it got good. And also, I mean, I would say 3 is when it got good. And it's the first one with The Rock in it. And it's the only movie in which The Rock actually plays really an antagonist, because he, like any good anime, which Fast and Furious is an anime, the bad guys eventually become friends with the good guys and just becomes one of the good guys. That movie is it's good, Jason. It's not good in, like, if you went to college and majored in film theory, that kind of good.
No, but it's like fun to watch, right?
But it's so good. And also, I had the pleasure of watching it with the one and only Jace, who would chuckle at every time Vin Diesel tried to express any kind of emotion, which is difficult for that man to do. Anytime he smiled, he just looked like some kind of naked gorilla. Just looks like a big old baby. And it's hilarious to see Vin Diesel acting, and also The Rock just like being very angry all the time, which is probably the best Rock, because I think he kind of the character kind of faltered after this installment. But still a very good sit down and watch action movie. I still think it holds up. It's fairly long. It's pretty well structured though, and I like it. All the characters are good.
I still haven't seen anything past Tokyo Drift, but I would like to just quickly take a moment and say, you hear that, Jace? Donnie told a story about you. All right, I'm done.
Yep, I have none other than that one, obviously. Of course.
That was all I wanted to say. Take that, Jace. You got a story on the show. Not the collective Jace, just the regular Jace, regular old Jace.
Yep.
AKA Flash, AKA the Cobbler,
The cobbler.
AKA Jace. Those are all the things that he saved my phone under.
Oh, okay.
Jace, AKA the Cobbler, AKA Flash.
Has he fixed your shoes?
No.
That's what a cobbler is.
I know.
Okay, I will
What's
not. I will not.
confusion?
I will not.
He
I will not dig any further.
was I just want to be I want to be clear before I say this. This is not a euphemism for anything. He was obsessed with my mom's peach cobbler. And
It's not a euphemism, yes.
so we just thought it was funny one night we were talking and thought it would be hilarious if I saved his name as
The cobbler.
the cobbler.
The gobbler of cobbler.
the cobbler. That's even better. The gobbler of cobbler. Oh, we
All
spent
right.
too much time talking about this. All right. The best thing that I saw this week is I and this is a tight call, but I watched this movie twice this week, twice within like 2 days, and I really, really enjoyed it. I think I mentioned a while ago I picked up a Criterion Collection edition of the 1950s Samurai trilogy, which is a series of three Japanese films that are adapted from a book about a. Which is adapted from the legend of some samurai dude. And this is the second film in the series, and I was able to watch it this week. It's called Samurai. I know I'm gonna fuck up the title, but whatever, here we go. Samurai Duel at Ichihoe Temple. And I believe this one came out in 1955. And Quentin Tarantino has cited this series as being a huge influence on the Kill Bill movies. The opening, I think it's the opening fight scene in this movie, is very much the fight scene between the bride and who is the girl with the spiky or with the bladed ball?
Gogo Yabari.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, Gogo. It's that fight scene is very much lifted from the opening fight scene in this movie, which is kind of funny, which I found kind of funny. And then later on, the fight between the bride and oh God, why can't I remember any of their names?
The ball man.
No,
Jaime.
who's she guided guarding?
She's
Who's
guarding
Gogo
someone?
guarding? No, who's Gogo guarding?
Oh, Ishii.
Yes. That fight scene is very lifted from another fight scene later during the movie, which I thought was kind of funny. Because I was watching it and I was like, oh, hey, I've seen this before. And it's also really cool because at the end of the movie, there is this huge fight between this one dude and I mean it's not like the Crazy 88, it's not that lifted, but it's like him taking on all these dudes. There's like 50 soldiers, and it's just really cool because it's all practical effects. There's some really long shots. There's some really well choreographed fighting, and yeah, no, I really, really like the movie. They brought back a lot of the characters from the first one. It felt very much like a story that is unraveling, not just a movie that was popular, and so they decided to make a sequel to it. And I'm very much excited to watch the next one, which will probably be this week.
Cool.
So that was the best thing I saw this week. All right,
Yay.
let's get into some trailer trash talk, which I'm excited to hear about from Donnie. Because the trailer we're talking about is the trailer for Spiral from the Book of Saw, which is a movie that is starring and being produced by, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but from what I remember, mostly kind of championed by Chris Rock. Which.
Yes, he is a fan of the franchise, and by happenstance, I think the story goes that he was at a wedding of somebody who is like attached to Lionsgate or like a producer or executive or something, and he was just like, you know what, like no one's really done anything with this, and Jigsaw has been a while ago, and he's just like, I have an idea, I kind of like it, and then they were like, okay, and then he kind of threw the idea at him, and they pretty much got everybody who was like who has been a staple in the Saw franchise creatively kind of has I was about to say written off. They signed, or like they pretty much like, because Lee
signed
Whannell
off.
and James Wan, they're both executive producers along with Chris Rock, and then also the dude who directed most of the Saws after James Wan did the first one, Darren Lynn Bousman, is back directing this one. So if you like any of the three that happened after the first Saw, like those were, that was kind of his thing. And then there's some writers that have been on Saw before who are writing the movie, And so now we finally have an official trailer and seeing what this movie is going to be like with finally, like, you know, like, finally seeing Chris Rock and Sam Jackson in a trailer for a Saw movie called Spiral. I think it's kind of weird that they say Spiral from the Book of Saw, which I assume is just, like, there's no book of Saw. There is, like some principles that you could put into a book that would be, like, a Bible for what Jigsaw did. A manifesto, as you will. But ultimately, it's
I think
it's a
that's
weird
what they're
title.
Going for.
And I like the trailer. I only watched it once because I didn't want to get too hung up on, like, spoilers. But it is I got the gist of what it was, and I appreciated it.
I do just want to hop in real quick and say that out of the group, Donnie is the one that is the most into the Saw movies. I think I have seen the first five, maybe. I don't know. I've seen bits and pieces of the other ones. And, yeah, I was excited to hear Donnie talk about it because he actually really enjoys these films. So, anyway, I don't know if you have anything else that you want to say. I will say that I did get a kick out of is Samuel Jackson's line, y'all motherfuckers want to play a game or something like that. Like, I thought that was really fucking funny.
Yeah, and I didn't see a whole bunch of Sam Jackson here, so I don't know if he's going to last very long or if he's an integral part or not. But Chris Rock, is the main character here and trying to figure out what's happening. And you just get quick glimpses. You don't get any, like, really gratuitous shots of, like, torture porn, which the series has been criticized for in the past. It seems like this could be going in a direction that could be both very terrifying but also well done. So I guess we'll see. It's hard to say from this trailer. And I honestly don't want to watch too much more because I just want to see the final product and just see, like, where they could possibly go that could help revitalize this series, you know.
Yeah, no, I'm excited because it looks different from all of the other Saw movies, which a lot of the trailers are very, you're right, like, they're very emphasizing the fact that there's traps and that they're gory and that they're fucked up. And this one looks much closer to the first one, in which a lot of the gore takes place off screen.
Yeah, so, I would almost put it, this is the closest thing that a Saw movie has looked to, like, Seven that I've seen from a trailer. It almost seems like a trailer, or like a trailer for a sequel to Seven instead of Saw. So that intrigues me, and I want to see, like what twists that they're gonna take in this movie, because Jigsaw was bad, Jason.
Yep. I know.
And this coming from the person who went to the very first screening of Saw 7, Saw 3D, and I was the only person in that theater, and that movie was not good, but also it freaked me the fuck out, and I got to see Cary Elwes for the last time, because I don't think he'd be in this movie, but, you know, we'll see. I would appreciate Cary Elwes in any form, but I'm interested.
Rock on.
And that's about all I got to say about that.
All right. Well, let's get into Secretary, which, as I previously mentioned, came out in 2002. It is very much... I think that this would definitely qualify under the definition of an erotic romance.
An erotic romance, yes.
Yeah, because I see that label on things a lot, and usually I feel like, for me, when I see that, I'm like, oh, that just means there's a lot of people fucking in it. and
fucking.
That there's just a lot of people fucking, and I kind of lose all interest because I don't know, who gives a shit, like, it's just people banging. I don't want to watch a movie just to see people banging. And so I was excited for, or not excited, but I think that this one lives up to the title because it is erotically romantic. It's not sex for the sake of being gratuitous or sexy or kinky. It's, you know, for the, it's very character driven and it helps move the story along. So, that being said, Secretary is a story of Maggie Gyllenhaal, who gets out of, I don't think you know what she's getting out of rehab for at the beginning, do you?
I think it's just a mental, she, well, no.
No. I mean, they show it, but, like, do they tell you right up front why she's getting, I guess they do, because they immediately,
they kind of do, though. They show the incident that sent her. So yeah. It's like a grace unit, almost.
Yeah, she was there for cutting, and they kind of flash back and forth between stuff, and you get to see her box of tools that she used, and basically she becomes James Spader's secretary, and he plays a character named Edward Gray, which I think is hilarious because...
E. Edward Gray,
because these movies are, I mean, I feel like you have to talk about the fact that, you know, there's another very famous, sadly, BDSM styled film, which I would argue is not at all an accurate depiction of BDSM, and is not a... Also not a good film, and that's the Fifty Shades of Grey movies. And I think it's really funny because they share the name of a character. Well, not the whole name, but, you know.
It's Grey. Grey is enough.
Yeah, and but then I also found it funny because Edward Grey is the name... E. Edward Grey is the name of James Spader's character in Secretary. And as I pointed out on the Facebook page, if you saw the post... you know, 50 Shades of Grey was adapted from
a dirty story written
on a Twilight fanfiction board.
Yes.
And so in theory, I'm assuming that Christian Grey was Edward Cullen in the...
Yes.
And so I just think it's funny that, you know, that just shows you how unoriginal those movies are. Because Edward Gray combines.
It's so funny.
Both the names.
And also, I think it's funny that, like, as Twilight is almost a bad version of say a Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Then it turns out that 50 Shades of Grey is also a poor imitation of what this movie is trying to do. So, like, it's anything like connected with Twilight, it seems to have a certain quality of
shittiness.
Yes. And I'm not gonna disparage the people who like that stuff. They can enjoy it, but also I think it's important to show them these things and see if they like these things better and see if they can enlighten themselves. Hard to say.
No. Yeah, no, I agree, because when people talk about, I don't know, I guess just BDSM stuff in general, I mean, this is the type of stuff that I think of, not the... bullshit in the 50 Shades of Grey movies.
Yeah.
Anyway, so she goes back and forth between kind of dating her boss and being introduced to this new world of, I don't know, I guess eroticism. And then also she's dating a guy named Peter. Right? Peter. Who's played by Jeremy Davies.
He's so funny.
And, yeah. And... Basically, she's trying to pick between the two, and then she suffers a breakup with James Spader's character, and then they wind up together at the end of the movie.
Yeah, not to spoil the movie for you, but it is a happy ending.
And it came out in 2002, so fuck you if you haven't
watched
it yet.
And I think also there's so much packed into the running time of this film that it's almost not a spoiler to say that it kind of closes with a happy ending, because there are so many things in between the start of the movie and the end of the movie that, like, are just, like, it's really the performances, the things that you come to realize along the way, how these characters are coming face to, like, the problems that they've had and how they are overcoming them and how to overcome their personal issues in, like, ways that are not looked at as normal. And sometimes the way that you are able to adapt and become, be happy in the skin that you're living in is to not be normal. You have to embrace the fact that you are a certain way and that you find other people who will embrace you for that uniqueness.
Yeah, no, there's a lot we can dig into with this movie. I quickly want to talk about, like, I love James Spader in this movie. I think he's fantastic. And I realized the other day that he is in Sex, Lies, and Videotape, which I've talked about a number of times, which is my favorite film about romance. And he's also in another kind of fucking weird romance movie that I really like called Crash. And in each one, he has, like, a different kink. Because in this one, it's BDSM. In Sex, Lies, and Videotape, he's impotent around women, and so he videotapes them talking about their sex life, and then he masturbates to the tapes later. And in Crash, he is sexually aroused by car accidents. And I don't know why it's so funny to me, but, like, you know, with the knowledge that he plays Ultron in the second Avengers movie.
Yes.
I don't know why, but it just makes me laugh. Like, because there's all these, and he's also, you know, he's on The Blacklist, which is the TV show that I don't know why, but I really, really enjoy. And
mostly, I'm guessing.
Oh yeah. Nope. He's great in it. And I just think it's funny because I feel like most of the people our age are going to know James Spader from Age of Ultron, from Blacklist, and not the fucking weirdo who was in
these like weird art house independent films that are just, you know, what people think about when they think about independent films, where it's just like, it's just some weird fucking weirdos, sickos, just doing stuff and just filming it. Be like, yeah.
Some avant-garde German bullshit. So, anyway, no, I just thought that was funny. So, and I do just want to say, like, I think James Spader is great. Like, I love him, and I think he's great in this movie.
Very.
And I think that he does a lot with what he's given to do. And I also think Maggie Gyllenhaal is fantastic. I think that she does a great job selling the transformation of her character throughout the film. And I think that watching her grow, watching their relationship grow, there's a lot of scenes kind of in the climax when E. Edward Gray breaks up with Lee, who's Maggie Gyllenhaal's character. I think it's funny because in a lot of romantic movies, what drives them apart is usually an external factor. And in this film, it is very much just the fact that Gray feels like a fucking weirdo. And he feels embarrassed.
He's hung up. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is also funny because he's telling her, don't be hung up, don't be ashamed. But he's the one that can't stomach his own I don't know, I guess his own sex life. And so I just think that's a really interesting take that we don't normally get to see, and it also makes it much, much more believable, I guess, maybe the word I'm looking for. And it allows you to connect with the characters a little bit more. I do want to talk about somebody we already mentioned, which is Jeremy Davies as Peter, who honestly might be my favorite performance in the whole movie. Just because he sells playing that guy so goddamn well.
Yeah, it's really creepy.
And
like, the
just
creepiest
to be...
thing in this movie is the normal guy.
Yeah. And just everything that they write about, everything they do with him, it works so well to make you think, oh my god, this guy's such a fucking creep. And I think my favorite moment, or one of my favorite moments in the movie, definitely my favorite moment that involves him, is when his parents are meeting Lee for the first time, and she's like, you know, or his mom is like, you know, Peter is assistant manager at JCPenney's, so...
Mm.
And then she just nods. And Lee's like, oh, cool.
Yeah.
And, oh, it's great. I love it.
But also in that same talk, like, his mother also says, like, oh, you know,
oh, yeah,
his sister is having a wedding in Vegas this fall. Maybe it'll be a double wedding. And it's just like, and he's like, no, like doing the throat, the cut it out thing. And it's like,
yep,
this family's bad. I see why this person is like this, only for a split second with, like, who his parents are, and you're like, wow.
No, yeah, absolutely. And but at the same time, they do a really good job, like, the way that he plays the character, I feel kind of bad for him.
Yeah, he feels like he is someone who has, like, never figured himself out, can't actually be genuine, and is, like, trying to adhere to these social norms that everyone tries to, and, like, has never had any time to grow, because he seems very childlike, in the same way that Maggie Gyllenhaal's Lee Holloway is, like, very childlike when she's released from the institution at the beginning of the movie, and she, like, she grows as a person throughout. Peter is someone who is specifically stuck. Like, he does not grow, he is not grown, and he will maybe never grow. And he's stuck as this weird, emotionally deformed man-child, which I can't speak to at all. I think in that, he was able to do so much with that character that just made it so creepy every time he was on the screen.
Mm-hmm. No, he did a really, really great job. And another great moment that I'm sure you also got a kick out of is, and I didn't ask, have you seen this before? Had you watched this before?
I have watched this. I haven't watched it in a while, but I have it on DVD, and that was when DVD, there was no Blu-ray, so this has been a while ago, and I used to watch this a lot because it did strike such a strong chord with me, because it is honestly one of my favorite, like, romantic movies. I think it's maybe one of the most honest romantic movies I've ever seen. So, I haven't watched it in a while.
No, I'm in the same boat. I think you might have been the one that introduced me to this movie. I'm not sure. It was either you or, Jason Thompson. But...
Man has good taste.
Yeah. but yeah, no, I agree. This is a very honest film, and that's where it gets a lot of its charm from. And it's not, it doesn't feel like it's trying to be, like, sexy. It just feels like it's trying to tell an honest romance. So, what I wanted to bring up is the scene. There's a scene where Lee tries to get Peter to engage in BDSM with her by spanking her, and it does not go well.
No.
Because she kind of lays over him and basically says, you know, like, just don't be afraid. And I don't remember exactly what she says, but she says something that you could take to mean, like, I want you to spank me. And then she looks over because he's not doing anything. And he's just, like, holding up a condom, like, this? Is this what you mean?
She's like, no. But if you want
I think she... Yeah, I think she rolls her eyes and she's like, forget it.
Yes.
And then he's like, oh, but what else? I don't know what else she could have meant. And then she's like, fine, but my clothes stay on and we keep the lights off. Yeah. And then you get to watch one of the most uncomfortable sex scenes that I have ever witnessed. Mm-hmm. Where he's just on top doing his thing and she's just laying there with the most annoyed look ever on her face.
I don't blame her.
Right? Oh, no, I love Maggie Gyllenhaal is so great in this movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is maybe, I want to say probably my favorite performance of hers. I don't think I can think of one that tops it. I'm sure there's other ones that she's a fine actress, but this is like the role I think about whenever her name comes up.
No, yeah, I want to look real quick because now I'm curious. Oh, I mean, obviously Frank, Michael Fassbender.
No, it doesn't even come to mind. I didn't even think about that. Other than most people knowing Maggie Gyllenhaal from The Dark Knight, that's pretty much the only thing I think people probably have any exposure to her about. But she has a penchant to do like really weird things.
Weird stuff.
Yes.
Man, Frank is a movie we should do on the show sometime.
That I think that would be interesting because I have very mixed feelings about that movie.
Same. I don't think that it is the movie that they advertise it to be. And I mean,
and
that
the
being
movie
said,
has problems.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I still very much enjoy the movie that we get, and I think that Michael Fassbender is fantastic in it. But it is a wild, strange ride.
I would say the thing about Frank, just a quick one sentence tangent, is that Frank is not a movie that you want to watch if you don't want any negativity in your life, or if you are in a emotionally vulnerable position, because that movie puts out bad vibes. Mm-hmm. Jason, that's why I haven't watched it since, and I didn't feel good while I was watching it. But I guess that movie isn't trying to put out good vibes, so
that makes sense.
What is putting out good vibes is this movie, though.
I was looking, though, just because I was curious, and I don't think I've seen anything else that the director, Steven Chainberg, I don't think I've seen anything else that he's made.
Okay.
He did a movie with Nicole Kidman and Robert Downey Jr. called Fur, an Imaginary Portrait of Diane Arbus. Did a movie called Rupture. 2016, that was the most recent thing. With Noomi Rapace. I don't know.
Noomi Rapace.
Anyway. Is that her name?
Uh-huh.
With the big NR.
Yeah. I honestly don't remember his I guess it's funny. This is just like, I just take this as a movie. I like never tried to track down the other stuff that he did. I just took this as like, oh, this movie's really good, and I really attached to it. And it's, you know, it's just one of my. Although on the DVD there is a commentary. I think it has like a producer and also I think a writer and director. I'm not sure, but here's the thing that I remember because it was so bad is that the producer who was talking about it, like, it almost seemed like he was watching the movie for the first time or something, because And he did that cardinal sin that you did on pod or on not podcast but commentary tracks, where the pretty much the only thing you did was just like comment on what was on screen and be like, oh yeah, there she's going in the room there, and you're like, shut the fuck up. You don't even know Jason. Before podcasts were a big thing, DVD commentaries were sometimes the only thing that I had to listen to make it seem like other people were my friends. So when I watched a movie with a commentary track on it, if a commentary track was bad, especially on a movie this good, like, man, it was such a bummer, because like, you paid your money to get the DVD, mm-hmm. and that's mostly what you did it for, and the content is in the movie. It is not, there is nothing more to really talk about in the commentary track, and the people behind the camera seem like they kind of stumbled into something good. And like, and this movie kind of like is, you know, more rides along the pace of the performances that were given to these people.
Mm-hmm. I real quick just want to say one of my favorite, like, just the bad commentary story that you just mentioned. I listened to an interview once with, I think it was Bruce Willis and Halle Berry, and she was talking about how they used to be neighbors and how she kind of, like, she was trying to be, you know, friendly and be like, oh, yeah, you know, like, I miss living next to you and how you doing, neighbor, stuff like that. And he was just like, what color was the person who lived across the street from us? What color was their house? Was it blue? Was it, like... just saying like the weirdest fucking shit. Like I firmly believe that, like, that, I mean, I used to think that Harrison Ford was the most unhappy person on the planet, like, in terms of actors and actresses. Nope, I am firmly holding the belief that it is Bruce Willis who seems to constantly be in a state of misery. And I also find it hilarious, and I think I've mentioned this on the show before, but, you know, have you heard about why he thinks people love Die Hard? Have I told you this?
I don't think so. I think if I okay, have so heard his, that, may push it from my memory.
His explanation of why people love Die Hard is because it is a perfect example of a New Jersey guy's comedy. It's got all that great New Jersey comedy in it.
I don't know what to say to that.
I think maybe, like, the reason that he's so unhappy is because, you know, he put out a musical album that everybody hates and makes fun of him for.
Don't forget about Bruno.
Yep. He wrote... Did he write and direct... Oh God, what's the movie? You know the movie I'm thinking of.
I really don't want to.
Hudson Hawk. Did he write and direct that?
Maybe. Yeah, because it's so bad.
It's very much like it was something that, like, he worked on to get made, and it was something that, like, he wanted to get made, and everybody hates it. I don't know, I just think it's funny because it's like everything that when he's just shows up to work, he's great, but when he wants something made, it's terrible. it's like Dan Aykroyd most of the time.
He did not direct it, but he co-wrote it, and he wrote the theme song.
Okay, well, that's not surprising, because that was around the time of Return of Bruno, I think. Ugh. Anyway. Ugh. So, do you have a... To get back to Secretary, do you have a favorite scene?
I want to say it's between... It's... This is going to sound bad, but it's one of the scenes where someone's masturbating.
Hey, what a coincidence!
I like her doing that, like, trying to fight between thinking about Peter, who is the more typical guy, and then Mr. Gray himself, and thinking about the things that he's doing and saying and what actually turns her on. She has like two scenes like that. There's one in her bed, and there's one when she's in the bathroom stall, and the person in the next stall is like, like, I thought she was going to be horrified, but she was just like very like, it was almost like she had a like life-changing experience listening to her do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, oh, okay.
She had that look on her face like, what have I been missing out on?
Yeah. It's very the, I'll have what she's having of this movie. Mm-hmm. I honestly want to say that one of my favorite scenes, 'cause there's so many, like, it seems like every single, it doesn't seem like they rehash anything, and every scene has its own, like, little, punch to it.
Serves a purpose.
Yes. Weird how, like, this is a good movie, and that's what they do to make it a good movie. It's almost like, some people don't know how to direct films. I would say it's probably, the first time that, like, Gray pulls her into his office and says, like, hey, or, like, what's the needle set and the band-aids for? Like, are you some, like, I'm shy, and, like, kind of, like, and he's the one who, like, tells her, like, you won't be doing that anymore. You won't be cutting yourself. Mm-hmm. And, like, and all of a sudden, all of a sudden she gets this confidence. That's where, like, the seed is planted, where she starts getting this confidence and associates this feeling with him, and how this relationship and this dynamic works so well between the two, because he is very domineering, yet also thinks he's a monster, but she is kind of like this scared, like, you know, a child. Like, she hasn't really experienced a whole bunch and just felt pain.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden there's someone who she looks up to who tells her, like, in a weird way, kind of taking the place of her father, who in the movie is, like, an alcoholic and abusive and stuff, like, not towards her, but, like, just not a good person. And yeah, he has his own arc off screen. You see a little bit of, but that is maybe the scene that kind of encapsulates their relationship and why it's so beautiful. Yeah. Is the first time he does that, or they do that, and then he takes a picture of her. There's just so many good scenes in this movie.
So I'm gonna say that my very favorite scene is it's the masturbation scene where he masturbates and then she goes home and masturbates. Like, that's my favorite.
Right. Scene. No, movie. That's the one when she's in the stall. She's still in the office with the
is
woman.
She?
Yep.
Okay.
Because she pulls up her shirt and she still has the stain.
Yeah. Yeah, that's my favorite scene in the movie. But to talk about something different, the other one that I really enjoy, and it's one of those weird scenes that's, like, just always stuck with me, it's when you see her calling him and reporting what she's having for dinner, and then he gives her, like, permission about what she's allowed to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's like 4 peas, a scoop of mashed potatoes, and all the ice cream she wants, or something like that.
Yep, he says, and then you can have all the ice cream you want, doll.
Yep, and like that scene, because I feel like it so perfectly encapsulates their relationship. It shows, and it's also great because I feel like I'm tripping over myself. I feel like one of the things that makes this movie great is that most of the time when they show BDSM stuff, when they show true BDSM stuff, it is told from the perspective of the dominant, and, like, you get to see, like, why it makes the dominant person happy. And I think one of the things that's really cool about Secretary is that it shows the submissive and why, like, what she gets out of this, and kind of her voiceover during that scene when she's like, I don't know why, if it's just the fact that he gave me permission, but, like, this food had never tasted so good before. And, like, when you watch her eat and she's just, like, got this huge smile on her face and everybody else is looking at her like, the fuck is wrong with you?
Yeah.
you're eating a pea. But no, I think that scene is just, oh, it's so good, and it so perfectly encapsulates their relationship, and it shows that, you know, they both genuinely get something out of this sexual experience, and I just think that's really cool.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's like, it's emotional support that I don't think is shown a whole bunch. Like, in romantic films, I feel like there's two people who express their love for each other for whatever reason, but you never see, like, how each person is dependent on the other. And mm-hmm. this is, it's a different dynamic than I think a lot of people are used to, but also it shows, like, very specifically how them as two puzzle pieces actually fit together, as opposed to just saying in the film, like, these two people say, I love you. Yeah, I love you. Like, no, they're very clearly showing what's happening and mm-hmm. and what the effect that each thing that they do takes on the other, whether it's positive or negative, until they actually figure out that they do actually belong together. And then mm-hmm. you see, like, what the entire picture is.
Mm-hmm. And you get to see the cockroach at the end.
Mm-hmm. Which, that's a sticking point for me, because I used to think that was always, like, a weird... There, I could see how that could be taken as a negative, and I think I did for a while. Like, oh, now they're happily ever after, but she's stuck in her ways, so now they're not going to be happy. But I think that's just the dynamic of their relationship. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like her look into the screen at the very last shot can be taken two ways, but I think it's positive. Like, I can't really take it negative anymore.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that this movie, it was so weird watching it this time, because I haven't seen it in a while. But did you see Phantom Thread?
No.
Okay. Phantom Thread shares a number of similarities with this film. And I don't want to go into, I guess, spoiler stuff if you haven't seen Phantom Thread. But I'll just say, you know, you should check out Phantom Thread. And it, I mean, obviously it doesn't go to near the extremes that Secretary does. Unfortunately, you never get to see Daniel Day-Lewis put a saddle and carrot on.
That one's just for kicks.
I know. I feel like that part of the montage had to have been a studio note, right? Like,
put a saddle on her.
Somebody had to be like, why don't they do anything weird?
It's true.
I want to see something strange.
What? This seems too normal. Put something in there.
And so they, and so then they put, because he's got hay all over his desk, and then they have put a saddle and on her and a carrot in her mouth.
I'm just glad that he never put a dog collar on her or something. Like, for some reason, like, the saddle is fine.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird.
A dog collar would have felt, to me, it would have felt too, I don't know if on the nose is the right term, but, like, it would have felt too Hollywood.
Yeah, that's what, like, you're expecting.
Yeah, that, like, if Maggie, and don't get me wrong, Maggie Gyllenhaal is naked in this movie, but if she had been naked a lot and he was just, like, leading her around with a collar, like, that would have felt a lot more like some executive being like, make her naked and put this collar on her and remind her that she's a woman and that we're the men. And make it happen.
Make it happen.
Do it. So, to be clear, I don't believe any of that. Just
no. And I think a lot of people could probably take this movie the wrong way in that case. And there is specifically when she's stuck to that desk for like 3 days, and there mm-hmm. is one person who comes in and be like, I have some books for you to read, and it's all like feminist theory, like think about the female struggle, and I'm like, mm-hmm. That was a joke, like put in there, I'm sure during that montage, but I also think, that's a real issue to have, but I don't think that's what this story is about, and I think it's also one of those things that, this is very specifically for this story, and it's hard to, I don't know, it's hard to, like, I'm having a hard time finding the words, but, like,
well,
there's a difference between how the story is unfolded and people, how people could take it, and what, like, the reality of the situation is.
Yeah.
I suppose.
In addition, I mean, I was just going to add that the fact that she sits there so long, she starts to urinate on herself. I mean, that is a fetish.
Yeah, it is.
It's not one that I have, but it's one that there are people that have it, and so it's not like it was a thing that was done just to be like, I want you to feel like shit.
Yeah.
I want this woman to remember that I want her to know her place.
Yeah.
She's got to do what the man says.
That, I think, that's also a scene that I think could be taken maybe the wrong way, that, like, he made her suffer, but also mm-hmm. it's more about how much she's willing to do to prove to him that she actually loves him, and mm-hmm. and she could, if she didn't, then she could walk away any time before that she did. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really telling, is that he was so convinced that she didn't actually love him that she was going to walk away before he came to the office to pick her up, and then happily ever after. That was a good scene. I did appreciate her finally actually reconnecting with her father, mm-hmm. which is something that, like, I thought was pretty they stuck the point at the beginning, there's a beat in the middle, and then, like, he had, like, finally, like, kicked his alcohol addiction, and he mm-hmm. was, like, had turned to the Bible, and he was essentially reading a passage that said that she could do with what she wants with her life, and she said that was, like, the one time that, like, she reconciles with her father, which I, that was like such a small thing at the end of that montage, but it was like mm-hmm. so well done.
No, I agree. All right, well, I'm going to ask you the question that I've been asking lately, which is, obviously we'd both recommend people watch this movie.
No.
Under what circumstances would you recommend someone watch this?
I would say with an open mind. Because I think a lot of people would go into this thing thinking, like, oh, it's a movie about BDSM. Oh, I gotta be weird. And be like, yes, there is things you're gonna see. Maggie Gyllenhaal being nude, and also James Spader masturbating onto mm-hmm. someone. This movie is not unweird, but also it's very true. So I think people who are going to watch this, I think they should know that if they're not familiar with it, then this is like a very good portrayal of why people do things like this, or why people would have, or why BDSM is in the world, and why it helps people. And also I think it helps people if you wanted to see like how people deal with mental illness. Because I think it's on both sides, on both characters. They both have, like, hang-ups and mental illnesses. They struggle with it. And I think it can kind of shed some light on what that actually means for people. So yeah. if you're willing to open up and learn about things that maybe you haven't thought about too long in the past, that's the place I would feel you should be when you're watching this movie.
I think that you should watch this as an instructional video.
Yes. I believe it. You couldn't have a better cast instructional video.
Absolutely. All right, let's get into what we've been into lately. I watched... Wow, in the context of the movie we just talked about, that sounds poorly worded. The things that I've been watching and reading lately. I have... Tonight, I got to see Birds of Prey, which if I hadn't seen... the second Samurai movie this week, I think I might be talking about Birds of Prey because I really, really liked it.
Wow.
And it's a solid flick, and please don't let the fact that Suicide Squad is a soulless, joyless romp keep you from watching Birds of Prey because it is fantastic. And it is great. I don't know what else to say. Like, it just came out and it's great, and you should watch it, and it's great. I will also say that I got my Takeshi Kitano box set in the mail last week, so I've been excited to start watching some of those. Say if you haven't seen any Takeshi Kitano movies, I highly recommend that you watch them because they are great. I'm also reading a book right now called All Souls. It's nonfiction, and it's about what's the description of it that I heard? It's Angela's Ashes, but in America, and it's really, really good, and I really enjoy it. I read the sequel, which is about him, the main character, the guy as a teenager, but I never read the first one, and I've been really enjoying it. And then I will also say I'm reading The Death Comes for the Archbishop by Willa Cather, which is an older novel that I read in college, and so I didn't feel like I got the chance to actually enjoy it. And so I'm reading it again now so that I can enjoy it. And I think that's everything I want to talk about. So, Donnie, you got anything you want to tell people about?
Just a few quick things.
Source code, maybe?
No, but funny thing is, been reading a science fiction novel that is maybe very relevant now to our time period, which is... I was about to say Cyberpunk. The thing that Cyberpunk is based on, which is Neuromancer. Mm-hmm. Neuromancer, the book by William Gibson. I'm about 50 pages in. And man, that book is it's not joking around. Like, that, it's very iconic for a very specific reason, and I see why now. Because that book does not... It starts pretty much running, and I mean, it hasn't really stopped since I started reading it, so I'd recommend that. Especially if you're gonna play Cyberpunk, the video game, later this year with Mr. Keanu Reeves in it. The other thing is, I'll just, my quick anime update. Neon Genesis Evangelion. What the fuck?
Still great?
Yeah, I'm at like about episode 20, so I'm in the home stretch now. And man, that really screws with your mind. Getting closer to the end of it. So, I've cried a little bit. So good. It has passed the cry test. If you cry during an anime, then it's good. Also, Dr. Stone, wherein Evangelion is horribly depressing, Dr. Stone is very, very positive and it has made me cry for very positive reasons. So I'd recommend those two if you'd like to watch an anime or need to pick one up.
Anime! Alright. Well, I think that's all we have to say about this. Thank you so much for listening to our show. Please check out more music by Dr. Tub Thumper. Please check out more art by Pralix. Please follow us. I am on Letterboxd, which if you're not using is basically a social media app for cinephiles, and my username is jdangerzone, one word. And I am on Twitter at Jason Ranks Stuff, I think. I don't know. Riley knows what it is. And then you can also follow the show on Facebook, which I run, on Instagram, which Riley runs, and on Twitter, which Donnie runs.
Please follow the Twitter account. My jokes are going to waste.
I'm the only one who gets them. who gets to read them.
Very depressing.
But no, please follow us on social media. Please tell your goddamn stupid motherfucking friends about the show.
Assholes.
Please. Please subscribe. Please rate our show. Please say good things. Please tell your family about our show. Please, you know what? It's February. You need a first date story for Valentine's Day? Talk about our show, right?
Mm-hmm. That'll get you laid. It's a good date podcast.
Yeah, you should listen to this episode in particular,
mm-hmm.
Or our last episode, or our next episode.
Imagine that,
because our next episode is also going to be on a romantic film. So,
it's gonna be the lighthouse.
Also, please hail Satan, and please watch more movies. Thank you so much for listening. Goodbye.
So long.